episode 2022 of No BS Job Search Advice Radio. I'm Jeff Alpin, the Big Game Hunter, your host for this show, as I've been for so many years. And this show is an interview that I did with Stephen Moulton. And we talk about looking at interviewing, looking at hiring from an employer's perspective, what they're trying to see. And what we're trying to do in this interview is capitalize on Stephen's background in HR to give you a perspective that most people rarely hear. Hope you find this helpful and give it a great review wherever you listen to the show. And we'll be back in just one moment. Today's show is brought to you by Skillshare.com. At Skillshare.com, they have thousands of classes available, not just simply about business or job hunting, but lots of different classes on a host of different subjects, almost anything you can think of, and they have one low price associated with your learning. They have classes about particular technologies you can learn, pottery, public speaking. I have a half dozen of my classes about job hunting there, writing, photography, film, almost anything you can think of, they have Skillshare classes available. Now, if you use my link, thebiggamehunter.us/Skillshare, they'll offer a free trial and 30% off if you decide to join. There's a lot to learn, and Skillshare is a place where you can learn it. Now, let's get back to today's show. So my guest today is Stephen Moulton, who has more than 20 years of corporate HR experience and spent 20 years teaching leaders how to effectively interview candidates. He's also coached hundreds of professionals and leaders break through the clutter and get that next great job. He's the author of several books, including Tell Me About Yourself and The CEO's Advantage, 7 Keys for Hiring Extraordinary Leaders, both on Amazon. Stephen, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, and I want to congratulate you on 10 years of podcasting and over 2,000 editions. It's amazing and remarkable.
Thank you. It's still stunning to me, and I have something coming out on Forbes.com probably late December about some of the lessons related to that. But enough about me. What do you think about me? Sorry, I had to use the old joke. Now, you've worked in corporate HR, and you've heard lots of people do and say lots of dumb things. And we're just talking about the candidates. We're not even talking about the hiring managers.
Right.
So when hiring managers are looking at things, what are they really trying to evaluate for? Let's start with that one, because we've got some fun things to follow up with on that.
Right. There's a spectrum of what managers, hiring managers are looking for. It's hard to say that any one of them is looking for the same thing. In fact, when you think about it, there's a skill level difference in hiring managers from totally unskilled to highly skilled. The problem is, if you ask all of them, they'll all say they're skilled interviewers, but they're not. In fact, most managers, when they start an interview, prepare for it when the person's in the lobby.
If we're lucky,
right. So there's no preparation. A lot of them don't know what they're really looking for. In fact, I call that scratch and sniff interviewing.
Fascinating. This confirms some of the things that are in my assumptions, where I say 80% of job descriptions maybe are accurate.
And coming out of compensation, having worked with job descriptions and managers creating job descriptions, that's a high number of potential accuracy.
I've always tried to be optimistic about it. And every HR person I talk to will always say, if we're lucky.
So going back to the managers, I think they want to find someone that they can work with. Somebody that can do the job. The problem is they don't know how to measure that. And that's the major problem.
I so agree. And so often it seems like they do it by whim.
They have their pet theories. They have their stereotypes. They have their biases. And yeah, when I do my trainings, I'll ask managers, all the people in the room, How many of you are biased?
Oh, no, not me. Or are they doing that now?
Oh, they're all saying, not me. I'm not biased. If you have a brain, you're biased. Okay. There's no question about it. The problem is, can you control it? And most people don't understand that 90% of the biases are subconscious.
And we're not just simply talking about race, religion, national origin, oral communications techniques. We can talk in terms of backgrounds.
Absolutely. Now,
that looks like an objective criteria, but it makes assumptions about a person.
Well, true. Two examples. I was working with an executive who said, if they haven't gone to an Ivy League school, they're garbage. I had another example where I was interviewing for a vice president of human resources at a hospital system. And into the conference room walked the CEO, the COO, and the CFO. And the CFO said, at least two of us in this room went to San Jose State University. Me and him. The interviews went perfectly. Why? He loved me. I was, that's the halo effect. We're similar type thing. So the whole spectrum of biases is just terrible.
It doesn't allow for individuality or individual difference. It works on the basis of assumption. And I'll also go the extra step using the examples that you have about universities. Often it deals with social class. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite stories, I heard on a podcast about a man who grew up in Los Angeles and had to travel by bus 2 hours to school each day through gang territory. And thus, when the bus went through certain areas, everyone lowered themselves so they weren't a target. And this is the first Black systems engineer at Twitter. You pause for a second and look at the price he paid to get to where he was.
Right.
And there's nothing taken into account that if you'd asked, on the interview, walk me through your background or tell me about yourself, this really wouldn't come up because no one, tells the story.
That's right. It's not a story people tell.
Right. So let's start off with tell me about yourself. Yeah. How do you believe it should be answered? What do managers that you work with, what do they really look for?
Well, before we get to that part of it, you have a question you like to have people ask in the interview before they get to tell me about yourself.
Absolutely.
That's about, what in the job description, what's really important for this job?
Right.
If you get to tell me about yourself, then it's going to come up at some point in time. It could be a networking event as well as an interview. So you got to be able to answer that question if you want to get people's attention. My belief is that the attention span of the average adult in the United States is about 8 seconds before they start thinking about other things, unless you get their attention. And one of the best ways to get their attention is by asking a question that has kind of an emotional twist to it. For instance, ever notice that a lot of people just struggle with getting an interview when they're doing a job search?
Happens all the time.
Okay. Now, the word in there, operative word, is struggle. And if you're going through a job search and you're struggling, that emotionally triggers. That's what I'm good at solving. Can I tell you a story? And then you share a story about how you've helped somebody solve that problem. That's the short version of what you're doing with tell me about yourself. And it's very, very effective in getting the attention and getting the engagement. And the key part of that is most interviewers make their hiring decision in the first 5 minutes of the interview. And if the first question they ask is, tell me about yourself, and you don't get that one done well, you're out. Because most people, they start with the whole biography, everything that's in their resume, their life, and everything else, and the person goes to sleep after 8 seconds. And they don't even hear any of it. because they're not engaged.
I agree with you about the, we live in an ADHD culture.
Right.
So attention span is important. I also believe of voice quality is important too.
Oh, absolutely.
And thus, I talk in terms of the theater of interviewing. Right. And the performance that goes into interviewing in order to engage an audience, to yeah. keep them involved, to use your voice. And since we're interviewing so often by video these days, to use your behaviors in certain ways to captivate, to enchant, to delight, you know, using right. your smile, the twinkle in your eyes right. in lots of different ways to engage an audience. If you're not doing that, it's sleep time.
Right, right. And that's part of the whole getting the response to the tell me about yourself down. It's the showmanship, if you will. You have to act. And you're on a stage, whether you like it or not. In fact, I'll often be on an airplane and somebody will say, well, what do you do? I go, good question. Ever notice? And then I'll go through the spiel. And I'll catch them and I'll get them into a conversation and I have their attention.
So your approach, I just want to make sure I have this right. They say, tell me about yourself. And you're flipping it in a certain way to ask them a follow-up question.
Yes, but it's not a direct question. I didn't say, have you ever noticed? It's just, ever noticed that people struggle with getting interviews when they're going through a job search. And, you know, yeah, I've had that problem, or I'm having that problem right now. Well, let me tell you a story. And then you tell a story. And it's a story about the problems that somebody faced, the actions you took to help them, and the results they got.
So using the example of a coder.
Yeah.
Ever notice a lot of managers struggle with getting their staff to deliver early? Let alone on time.
Right. Well, yes. Yeah. Well, let me give you a story about when that happened to me and then just share the story. And people love stories.
It works really well. Now, I heard you go into your framework for storytelling, but was that STAR, situation or task, action, result, or did you just use a different approach to the story?
Well, STAR, if you will, was a copyrighted thing that DDI had on their targeted selection program. So I avoid using STAR. It's the same concept. The problem or situation you're facing, the action you took, and the results you get, or the outcome become.
Par for the course.
Par
Got
for
it.
The course. Or you can say challenge, action, result, car. But it's still the same concept of you describe the struggle that you're facing. You talk about what you did to resolve that struggle and how you got through it.
Beautiful. Now, looking at it from the employer's perspective, right. What are they looking for from the answer? What are they hoping to hear when you're answering, tell me about yourself?
You know, they hear the same thing over and over and over. You know, when they hear people give that response, what this does in this approach is to give them something different, which sets you apart from the rest of the candidates that they've already talked to and asked that same question of. But it also starts to engage them in a conversation. And what they're looking for, it's something different, frankly.
They want to be engaged.
They want to be engaged.
And
they want a reason to talk to you.
And entertained and influenced, persuaded. There's a whole host of things that they're looking for out of this experience that comes with, you know, as I say in my own work, when firms hire, competence is only one thing they look for.
Right.
Self-confidence, character, chemistry, maybe a little bit of charisma, because charismatic people always do better than non-charismatics.
Right.
Ultimately, they want to trust the person that they hire.
And then when somebody...
And folks, we'll be back in just one moment. Have you been struggling on your interviews? Are you not getting the results that you want? My course, my book, my Kindle book, The Ultimate Job Interview Framework, will help you dramatically improve your performance. Now, if you'd like the course, it's a video course that I offer through Udemy. You can order it at thebiggamehunter.us or as a paperback or Kindle book on Amazon. What the course will teach you is really very simple. The best question to ask on an interview and when to ask it. How to answer the question, tell me about yourself, far better than anyone else would ever answer it. In addition, you'll be able to tell stories that connect the dots with the interviewer about how your background fits the role and be able to ask questions that are going to allow you not to step into the minefield that you've been in too many times before in your job search and in your career. So again, it's called The Ultimate Job Interview Framework. It's available on Udemy. That's udemy.com. Or you could go to my course directly at thebiggamehunter.us/interviews. Again, available inexpensively as a course or as a paperback or Kindle book on Amazon. Now let's get back to the show.
Who does their act together?
Now, I agree. And my thing is always, how do you measure for got their stuff together when each side is trying to lie to the other?
Well, let's just say they're both trying to put their best foot forward.
They're posturing.
Right.
I've never heard of an employer saying to a job hunter, you know, I got a problem.
Right.
You know, I've taken over this group and I've inherited a team of bozos. We are the lowest performing group in the organization. And my predecessor got fired and so did hers. I need to hire someone to save mine. No one ever says that. And which gave me the idea that hiring managers are posturing just like job hunters.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So when the employer obviously gives up on the idea that they can really, well, they forget that job hunters are posturing. They really believe this is the truth.
Unfortunately, sometimes that's true.
And I believe that because statistics show that within 12 to 18 months of a new hire, most hiring managers have buyer's remorse.
Right.
So given that fact, I'm wondering, what does the hiring manager, what else are they looking for in some of the questions that they're asking?
You know, I think most people are looking for someone like them. Someone that thinks like them, something that not necessarily looks like them, but has the same philosophies that they figure they can get along with. They're not looking for someone who's going to compliment them by being different.
And sad. That's
the sad part of it. What a lot of times when I shouldn't say always, I learned to do a structured interview approach. And I really set everything aside to try and get the details of what this person's accomplished before I make any kind of decision. And that's not easy to do because a lot of things can play into the biases that we have. But gathering the data is really crucial to making a good hiring decision. And there are some companies out there that are really rigorous about using a behavioral approach to interviewing.
A behavioral approach to interviewing?
Yeah.
Could you explain that to the audience?
Well, let me back up and say there's really kind of three basic kinds of questions you can get in an interview. There's the weird or unusual questions, all right? Like, why are manhole covers round? Questions like, where does light go when it goes out? Questions like, why do people drive on parkways and park on driveways? You know, weird or unusual questions. And there's not much you can get out of that as far as the qualifications of an individual. The next type of question is what I refer to as a hypothetical question, situational questions. What would you do if questions? Mm-hmm. What kind of answers do you think you get to hypothetical questions?
You get how a person thinks.
You get hypothetical answers. Okay. You get the textbook hypothetical answer, because what would you do if? Well, if I had this come up, I would do this because that's what the world says I'm supposed to be doing. But in reality, I'd do that. But they don't say that. All right. And then you have the behavioral-based question, which is, tell me about a time when. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to give you a secret here that I teach people to do. Because when you respond to a behavioral interviewing question, time about time when, try to say, about this time frame, working with this individual, use a first and last name if you can. So when I was working at Square D with Mike Javits, my director of human resources, this is the problem I faced. Now, the reason I suggest using that name, the name of the company and the name of the individual, is that subconsciously, the person who's the interviewer is thinking, this must be a true story because he's attached a name to it.
Interesting, and I can see that working.
Okay, and you do want to keep it a true story because they may well ask to talk to Mike Javits, okay? Mm-hmm. All right, so then you tell you go through the PAR thing of problem, challenge, action, and results. You want to keep it fairly short. So you take no more than a minute to give that response. That way you have their attention through it and you're changing from the problem to the action to the result in about 15 second increments. And now if they want more information, they can ask more. But you've not muddied the waters with a lot of extraneous stuff. You kept focused on one topic. And it's easy for them to follow when it's one topic and it's problem, action, result. They can follow that.
Yeah. And, when I think of that problem, action, result approach, or any of the frameworks for that matter, it confines you so that you don't wind up rambling. So if you think of it from the standpoint of what you're trying to accomplish, everything is designed to deliver the information to the audience in a way that they'll receive it well and get it. Yes. And you're demonstrating how you fit the role that the employer has available, right?
Right. I was coaching a former vice president of a very large retail grocery store. He had lost his job because of a merger. He had been out on 20 interviews, and he said, Steve, I'm struggling. I've gone all these interviews with like 20 different companies, and I've not even made the second cut. And here's a vice president who had been on one side of the desk interviewing people for years.
Often the worst interviewers, because they know what they look for, they don't know what other people look for. And right. They extrapolate what they look for onto other people, and it's very different.
His problem was he's rambling.
Oh, painful.
Okay, so I sat with him for an hour, and we focused in, I asked questions, we created the problem action results for various situations. Next day, he went on an interview with a large corporation. That afternoon, he had a job offer. Because he was able to focus in and responding properly.
And I'll go the extra step telling a story of mine of someone who came to me who'd been on 15 interviews, no second interviews. And we went through a mock interview and I heard his answer to tell me about yourself. And I just said, oh God, I know what it is. And the answer was, he was bored answering the question that came through in his voice. Every interview, they asked the same things, and he gave the same answer in the same kind of way, and it showed no life. And notice how sing-song I'm being with that.
Right.
And I remember him doing much the same kind of thing. And thus, it didn't engage people. It put them to sleep in much the same way he was put to sleep. Right. And my reminder, folks, is it's opening night at the theater. You've spent a couple $100 for tickets for the show. You want to see a good performance. Now, 3 months later, there's an audience there as well. They want to see the same performance as opening night. They don't care if the cast had a bad night the night before. It's
absolutely.
It's your opening night. You want to see the show at best.
Right.
And often people don't give that.
Yeah, and you go back to the situation with interviewers. An interviewer may have a bad day. And you might be sitting in front of them at the end of the day when they're hungry, they've had a crummy day, and you're getting interviewed for a position, and they really don't want to be there. And they really don't want to be in front of you. And that is to your disadvantage, and you've got to engage them. I remember I was talking with one of my recruiters when I was at a healthcare company, and she had interviewed an individual, a engineer, at the end of the day. And she walked into my office and said, "This guy isn't getting, not even worth it, not even worth it." I said, what happened? And she said, "I was having a great crappy day and he just wasn't answering the questions well." I said, "Tonya, did you really give him a chance?" And she said, "Yeah, not really." So she brought him back in and re-interviewed him, ended up hiring him, turned out to be a fantastic engineer, but it was a skilled interviewer having a crappy day.
And folks, notice in this scenario, has nothing to do with the job hunter, has to do with the employer. It has to do with their willingness to connect with you and pay attention maybe.
Right.
And their ability to shift their mood. I'm wondering, Steve, are there circumstances where you would ever coach a job hunter? I'm getting the idea that this wasn't a good day for you. Would it be better if we rescheduled?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, a study was done of parole judges years ago, and they were trying to figure out what was happening with when they were open to giving parole and not open to giving parole. And here's what they found. Early in the morning, you know, from 8 to 10, they were very open to giving parole. From 10 to noon, when they were getting hungry, that diminished significantly. After lunch, they're more open to giving paroles. And an hour and a half, 2 hours later, what's that telling you about when you want to schedule your interviews? First thing in the morning or right after lunch?
And your doctor appointments too, by the way.
That's right. My wife went in for a little surgery one time, and talking to the nurse, she said, you're here early. And I said, yeah, that's great, because first thing in the morning, the doctor's going to be awake. There's fewer mistakes first thing in the morning.
Although if it's 4 a.m. surgery, yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah. But no matter. Now, when a hiring manager gets to the point of asking, so do you have any questions for us?
Right.
What are they hoping to hear when they ask that question?
Are you really interested in being successful in this position? Are you going to help me solve my problems? So I think the questions you want to be asking are, in the next 6 months, what do you hope I'm going to accomplish here? At the end of the year, what's going to make me a great employee on my review? You know, those kinds of questions are really going to be more important to them than what the benefit's about.
Yeah. And by the way, that those questions also allow you to hear whether this is a job that you can succeed in. Because right. Sometimes you hear crazy stuff.
Right.
At which point you can mentally start taking that step backward and go, okay, glad I dodged that bullet, and get yourself out of there.
That's right. Yes, those are really important questions to ask.
Overall, when hiring managers are making decisions, when they get to the point of deciding, they've got two or three people that they can choose from. They're bringing them back because no one's going to decide between the three people on the basis of one interview. They want to have one more opportunity to bring them in for the beauty pageant, except they've narrowed it down in the Miss or Mr. America beauty pageant to three finalists. Right. Once they get to that point, what are they looking for?
Well, I guess the question is, what has been the interview strategy up to this point? Are they the only person making the interview, doing the interview and making the decision? Is there a group of people that are going to be involved in making the decision? Are those individuals going to be interviewing them one-on-one or in a group interview, team interview? At that point in time, I think they're just looking for any reason not to hire you.
So it's a rule out scenario first.
Right.
So folks, you can do things to disqualify yourself. I'm wondering, one of the things I tell job hunters to look for is in the first round or in the earlier rounds, there may have been a rough edge that surfaced up until that point, which can be the excuse for why they turn you down later. Mm-hmm. So you have to proactively address that in later round interviews so that they never forget this thing. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go in there like it's a sore, and they're going to poke at it and poke at it and poke at it until you cry uncle. Mm-hmm. So understand, folks, I believe that that's what's going to happen. But has that been your experience when you talk to hiring managers as well? They keep poking at that spot as part of the rule out process?
Right. And any little reason not to hire you will be and part of that's because they got to live with this person. And if that's a sore spot for them, they're not going to want to live with that sore spot, even if it's not true. It's a figment of their imagination, but to them, that's reality.
Right. So folks, you have to be prepared for that rough edge that when you reflect on, because that's going to be the place where they can easily rule you out unless you deal with it. So let's say we've got three finalists and one out of the three just hasn't dealt with it. How do we play choose between the final two? How do you play Solomon dividing the baby and picking the right one?
You know, when I do the structured approach, I've gone through my six or eight competencies that I'm looking for, and I've rated whether or not these people had them. I will take a look at where their strong and okay skill levels are, and narrow it down to, you know, well, geez, Steve had strong on the first four and okay on the second four, and Peter had strong on the first, you know, some on the first four or strong on the second four. It might be splitting hairs. But finally, it's going to be truly, do I like this person or not?
I knew you were going to say that, because it's always the subjective criteria that eventually emerges. And the coin flip, the mental coin flip that people have. Okay, they're comparable, neither one's perfect. I got to fill this slot or I lose the budget by the end of the year. Okay, I like her better.
Right.
And this is where we get into biases again.
That's right. But you know, as far as I'm concerned, if you've actually found two qualified people and they both can do the job and they both look like they'll fit the organization, at that point in time, being subjective is okay.
Except under federal, state, local law.
as long as they're qualified. If they're not qualified, that's different.
And I'm going to go back to the point around, yes, under law, there's the bona fide occupational qualifications that gets used as a criteria for evaluation. But in these days where the perception that white heterosexual males are advantaged in the workplace, folks, we got to be aware that the bias exists. And
right, and on the opposite side of that, if you have a minority candidate and a white candidate, and you choose the minority candidate, you know, that's a bias because you're trying to advantage the other person. But it was interesting. There was a Supreme Court case 30, 40 years ago, where it was a city of Santa Clara, and a white person had gone through this selection process, and they had a score of, let's say, a 76, and they got down to the hiring for that, and they selected a person with a 74. Happened to be a minority. The white person sued. And what the Supreme Court basically says is 76, 74, no big difference. Management's got to have the ability to make a decision for the best purpose of the organization. And if they choose a minority over a white, because it's the best purpose of the organization, they have to be able to make a management decision. And that management decision, by the way, is biased. They have the ability to do that. But they're essentially equal.
And folks, I'm wondering here, and I'm thinking out loud.
Yeah.
If you're a minority individual of one form or another, race, gender, whole host of different things, whether it's appropriate for you or whether you should be encouraged to put that on the table about diverse thought, diverse approach to things, that you can see things that others might have a blind spot to in the course of your interview.
There is a lot of research that says having teams that are diverse actually are more effective, more productive, and more innovative.
So it's wise to put that on the table and advantage yourself.
I think not just putting it like you said, but in a story saying, I was part of this team that was a really diverse team, and we outperformed everybody because of our diversity. You know, and describe how you did that and what made a difference in that. That can be a sales tool. But just laying it on a table of, hey, you know, you got to remember having diversity is really important. You know, that just kind of throws it in the face and says, thank you very much. I'm not going to play that game.
And thus, folks, working it into a story at any point in the interview becomes a way that even if you are the one minority individual, as often happens for Black men and Black women, for example, in some parts of the country, Latinx men and women, you have to be in a situation where you can call out the fact that you are able to spot the blind spot of the dominant group and present it in such a way that they could get it and be open to it.
Right.
And that becomes a great story to work with.
That's a very powerful way of interjecting that potential of making a difference on a team.
Amen. Hey, what haven't we covered so far that we should?
Oh, gee. You know, the executive level. I've seen a lot of organizations at the executive level send their candidates off to industrial psychologists for a review of their mental, so to speak, suitability. Have you seen that happening?
Very often. Very, very often. And it's always interesting which test they send them off for.
I know I spent a whole half a day with an organizational psychologist for one position. And it was the intellectual stuff. It was this psychological stuff, you know, personality profiles and all that kind of stuff, and an interview for 2 hours. You know, it was like, I think I'm brain dead at this point in time.
We know that about you, Stephen, but that's a different conversation.
Right.
But some of the tests people get set off for, you can go on to Google, find out about the approach that the testing organization takes, and sometimes you can go to use Google to understand what the organization is trying to find out about you through the test and right. steer your answers in ways that are effective. Is that what you found?
Yes, and I've also found that not all the tests are really accurate.
Yeah.
I was working with an organization and they were using a test across the organization. And it was a situation where the person would be interviewed by this company. And then they would, based on certain criteria, tell the organization whether or not to be successful. And I went back and looked at the results that were given. And there was zero correlation between successful people and the actual interview results. None.
And often that's one of the things that organizations fail to do with their hiring managers. They fail to evaluate the success rate that people have had with their hires to review what they could be doing better.
That's true. That's true. And you know, when people get up to the executive level, they think, well, gee, I've been doing this so long, I can't fail because I've been doing, you know, for years and I, you know, I'm not going to be wrong. My gut's going to tell me this person's good or this person's not any good.
The lies we tell ourselves. Stephen, this has been a lot of fun. How can people find out more about you, the work that you do, the books, whatever?
If they go to jobsearchskillsforprofessionals.com, they can download a free resume template that has been proven to be 50% more effective than almost everything else that I've seen. And it includes do's and don'ts, not only the template, but a sample resume, 104 words, verbs, action words that they can use in a resume that are effective, and a free opportunity to do 20 minutes with me on a career caffeine strategy session. They can get the book, Tell Me About Yourself, at Amazon on Kindle. And I got version 2.0 coming out in about a month.
So that's today's show. I hope you found it helpful. And if you did, here are a few more ways to get information and advice from me. First of all, visit my website, which is thebiggamehunter.us. Go to the blog. There's a lot there to help you. In addition, if you need interview advice, I've created a course called The Ultimate Job Interview Framework, available as a video on udemy.com. That's udemy.com, or available as a paperback or for Kindle on Amazon, and will help you stand out in a great way on your interviews. Also, if you're interested in my coaching you, there's a button on the site that says schedule. Schedule time for a free discovery call or schedule yourself in for coaching. I will love to help you. I'm able to help with regard to interview preparation, leadership coaching, salary negotiation advice, making a good decision between different offers, anything related to improving yourself in the workplace. If you have questions for me, you can schedule 15 minutes with me at thebiggamehunter.us/live, or an even less expensive way is at thebiggamehunter.us/video answers, where you can leave a message for me and I'll respond with a 3 to 5 minute video. Please financially support the podcast by clicking the button below and pledging whatever you'd like. I really appreciate it. Finally, watch me on TV. Download the Job Search TV app for Fire TV, Fire Stick, or Roku, or BingeNetworks.tv for Apple TV and 90-plus smart TV platforms. I'll be back tomorrow with more. In the meantime, I hope you have a great day. Be great!